Hello and welcome to another episode of the Chain Hypervax. So today's a big one, right?
I've been
punching Jim Lee in your face.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like over and over and over.
Now I'm punching Jim Lee back in this episode. I guarantee
and
it.
Don't say that. And this he's doing is okay. And this is like I thought I was doing an issue one month, but I might have been doing a Jim Lee month without knowing it.
Mm.
Honestly, because he's been involved in most of the projects we've talked about, except for Spider-Man.
Wow. I didn't know that.
He did the work for Batman and Superman. He did the cover for the one the Superman. What else? He did something else. What other comics are we talking about?
We talked about Batman and Robin and The Walking Dead.
Oh, you're right. The Walking Dead, he didn't have anything.
Yeah, that he would not have been involved
Yeah. All right, anyway. But back to what we're talking about. Which is X-Men number 1 from 1991.
Yeah.
So this was with Jim Lee. He started filling in 1989 for Mark Silvestri for mm-hmm. Uncanny X-Men. Okay, he started in X-Men number 248. And he did kind of like guest art mm-hmm. for it. He went to art school because he loved The Watchmen so much.
Oh.
He was a big Frank Miller guy. And I personally don't think his artwork looks like, you know, Frank Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, later
that's okay. You should develop your own style.
And I definitely think Jim Lee has his own style, but it became kind of a, you know, he kind of got a following for when he did do the filling in.
Okay.
Cause he did things a little different. Also during that time, the run on Uncanny, he co-created, to be nice, my favorite X-Men character of all time,
mm-hmm.
which is Gambit. So Jim Lee created Gambit during that time with Chris Claremont, and still probably my favorite X-Men character, despite what the films have done. You know, I feel like Gambit should have his own movie, like a good one. All right, anyway. So in 1991, due to the fans enjoying his artwork, he did a reboot of X-Men. Mm-hmm. It wasn't called Blank X-Men, no adjective, similar to mm-hmm. what we talked about with Spider-Man. It was literally called Marvel Comics X-Men. And it was considered Volume 2, which is... It's X-Men Volume 2, Number 1, right?
Okay.
And that's what you have.
Yeah.
And that's what you read. And it is, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, still, to this day, and probably will never be taken down because people don't buy comics anymore, the number one best-selling comic book of all time with sales. Did we talk about how many copies?
No.
It was like 300,000 for the Batman and Robin.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't talked about any of the others, though.
Well, this one's important. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Give me a guess. Sales.
Well, if you're saying, you know, it's in the Guinness Book of World Records, I'm thinking, like, you know, we're talking over a million. But
yeah, so take a guess. That's fine.
Okay, 1.2 million is what my guess
is. All right, so being the number one best-selling comic book of all time in the Guinness Book of World Records, X-Men Volume 2, Number 1, sold 8.1 million copies.
8.1? So this issue you have is worth not much at all, because there's tons of them out there.
Yeah, it's probably not.
People are insulating their walls with these things.
It has the gatefold cover, which you did not even know, right? It folds
out. I think I knew that, but like, you know, it was a little bit ago that I read it now. So.
Anyway, it's got everybody you need. It's got Cyclops, Jean Grey, Rogue, Storm, Magneto. It literally is a Magneto... you know, verse X-Men series.
Yeah.
And it's just drawn completely different than what we were used to, except when he filled in. So this is an important, very important.
Okay, so comic. This one is actually like drawn differently. This is a unique...
You know, this was like a fresh start.
Okay.
You know? It really was just about the two factions. Everything's bigger, you know, the characters, if you notice, it's not, there's not a lot of panels, you know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of large images. It was a unique comic.
Yeah. There was a lot of...
still considered the comic that changed the X-Men forever.
Okay. So, like, this is important.
It is important. That's what we're talking about.
This is important. Okay. But, like, a lot of the large panels were large enough that it's like, oh, you can kind of choose how you want to read through this.
Yeah, things are over top of
like, it's not necessarily clear which order you should read things in.
I agree.
So, yeah. Which was interesting. Which was fine. I found it compelling in several ways, but there were several things I didn't like about it, which is something that we talked about in, I think, in the grab bag thing, because was it X-52 or something like that? No, it was X-Force. It was X-Force. Yeah, and I had the same problem with this one that I had with that one, which was that, like, you've got these battles going on between people, and they are having, like, paragraphs of conversation with each other while they're, like, doing this, and it was just a bit jarring and weird. And I don't know, is this a thing that they did in X-Men? Is this, like, do they do that much expositional interaction while they're fighting with each other? Or,
you know, whenever I read X-Men, and I don't know why, but I do see it as, like, a very talkative fencing. You know, yeah. It's kind of like a Robin Hood.
Yeah.
What, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, dialogue.
There's like a chivalrous kind of sarcasm while you're going through things.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's long-winded.
is a little too much between hits. Yeah.
And there's a portion of me that's just kind of like, I don't know. So this goes back, we've talked on some other episode of this podcast about like how really effective minimal dialogue can actually be harder hitting than really expositional dialogue. And I felt like I was on the other side of that. In this issue that, like, I'm just kind of, like, I'm weighted down with all these words when, like, one short little five-word sentence could probably say some of this stuff better. And it would fit the fighting situation better as well. So, I don't know. So, that was a difficulty for reading this issue. But that's just me. And the thing that's nice about the issue is that, like, it's actually a very compelling story. I would definitely read more issues. It's just I would want them to tighten up some of this. So there's that. But so that it seems to me like this almost takes place after, like, this isn't quite a reboot. This is like takes place after whatever volume one was, wherever they stopped doing that. Because it's like they're not establishing the X-Men. They're like reestablishing the X-Men. And Magneto is like already in this other situation and is no longer a threat to humanity and then decides that he's going to become a threat to humanity to a certain extent, or at least he's going to establish like a safe haven of his own for mutants. And if anybody tries to mess with that, he will destroy them, including X-Men and you know, whoever else. So it was actually a very compelling setup right away. And it was like, okay, big conflict, but like justifiable, understandable from all perspectives, you know, right away. So that was actually really nice. But yeah, but also like, I don't know the things that people look for when they're reading comics. Like, you like Jim Lee a lot, as we've established. But, like, I don't know what's different between that and, like, other X-Men comics. So, like, if you say, like, there's a transition from one artist to another, I'm not sure that I would be able to tell the difference. Just because I haven't read that many comics.
You could definitely tell the difference between Jim Lee and
the
traditional
artist. Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, the artists get that much creative... like, dominance of, like, okay, you're the artist on this comic book, you just have to produce the thing.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Lee in particular, just because he gained so much notoriety doing Uncanny.
Oh, okay.
That they were like, okay, you can okay, so take a few
like
liberties.
He got full free reign, it's just he was able to, he was able to earn that based upon what
he
did.
Correct.
Okay.
After this, after 1991, he went on to do, Wildcats, so he did his own comic through Image.
Oh, okay.
He founded his own company. I mean, it was... Wildstorm was... I mean, you know, there were a few... I read a few Wildcats. But this was really the one, you know? And it actually is a lot of people's first comic.
Oh, like their first introduction to reading comics in general. Okay. Uh-huh.
So, I guess it didn't sell you as much as it sold the entire world. 8.1 million! We tried.
Off the rails.
You know, folks, we tried.
We tried.
I figured this would have been an easy. A layup.
Well, there's one thing you could say about having a numbskull like me on the show, and that is, after hearing how important this comic was to the world, I proceeded to give my honest opinion of it, which is that there are aspects I don't like about it. But be that as it may, we can go through the rating system and see where it actually comes out.
Yeah, let's find out. Now, when I say dialogue, it's not the amount of dialogue.
Yeah.
All right.
It's the quality of the dialogue itself. So I would have to give the dialogue... I'll give it a 7, because it none of it was... none of it was, just over the top and aggressive. The dialogue made sense. It was conveying, the ideas that the characters are trying to express. So I would have to give it at least a 7. If it continued that way throughout the series, it would just weight down the series, in my opinion. So I would have to decrease the score past that. But who cares?
All right, next up, artwork.
I would say an 8 on artwork.
Okay. And next would be, what's next? Plot, story.
Plot and story. That's a 9, because it was a very effective setup. I mean, I imagine it helped that I knew a little bit about X-Men, mostly from the first
few. You would need
movies.
To know powers.
Yeah, you'd need to know powers. You'd need to know, what's the dispute between humans and
even?
X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, relationships would help a little bit. Definitely the relationship between the X-Men and Magneto. That, knowing that helped. But, just getting to the end of the issue, you've already established all of the terms of who people are, where they are, and what is their relationship with each other. Mm. And you've already, triggered this event where, you can see all of this, tentative truce, so to speak, between the people groups. It's all coming apart, and it's just going to be chaos for a while. So I thought it was a very effective plot establishment.
Entertainment.
I would say a 7 on that as well.
Okay. And lastly, the cool factor.
7.
7. Just a 7.
Just a 7, yeah. Wow. I'm bucking the trend. Hey, everybody else, you can rate your own thing on here and say, look how wrong this guy is.
Do they have, because you do Goodreads, they have comics on there.
Do they? Yeah. I don't know. I never thought to look, but.
They do. So that equals a 38 multiplied by 2 gives us a 7.6 out of 10. That's not very high.
That's not very high, no.
Jeez.
I guess the question is, would I read more issues? Yeah, I would read. I'd read at least another issue and see.
Yeah, two. They continue to get
it's
good.
It's very, very well established conflict between these characters, and it's understandable. A lot of times, they'll do a good job of explaining the conflict between characters, but you're like, yeah, but I just don't buy it, you know. But in this case, it's no, this is very understandable, relatable, so to speak. So yeah, I'd read more issues.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we were able to give 14 minutes to the greatest selling comic book in history of the world, so that's good. But nonetheless, I do recommend you check it out.
So, just a brief question, because we have another minute or so. Everybody should check it out, because I'm probably wrong that this is probably a masterwork of comic book creation. But how does this work when they you got a month or so to sell this thing? And if it sells really well, are they just printing more and sending more to the shops, and the shops are just ordering a bunch more, and that's what happens?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of works the same way that it does in the traditional publishing world, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. If it just sells, you just keep on ordering.
We got too many people coming in.
And as long as there's orders coming in, they'll just print more.
Correct.
Okay. That makes sense. Because I don't know.
Well, now you know. And knowing is half the battle.